Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Jeff Ponce, Carlos Collazo here. Another of the Baseball America Hot Sheet shows. We are glad that you have joined us here on a wonderful day where we've got spring training games, we got college baseball, and most importantly right now, as someone who's been loving the World Baseball Classic since 2006, we've got World Baseball Classic. All of our World Baseball Classic coverage is brought to you, our friends at Fox One, which is live. Stream all your Fox favorites together in one place, including all WBC games over the next few weeks. And after that, the best MLB action all season long. If you haven't been checking it out this week, I don't know what's going on because, Jeff, we have so much WBC action. One of the things we love about this is the chance to watch some of the best players from all around the world, but especially guys from the KBO, guys from the MPB, Korea, Japan, showing what they can do and giving a little bit of sneak peek sometimes as far as guys who are going to come over to the U.S. Who has stood out to you so far?
Yeah, I think we can start. We'll talk about some Japanese pitching, but we're going to start on Team Korea. I had talked about this in our WBC preview actually on this show probably about a month ago. But there are a couple of Korean prospects that are under the age of 23, incredibly interesting, probably years away from coming over, but I think it's led by two guys that have really kind of led their offense, and Do-Young Kim, third baseman. He's DH'd a lot for the Korean team, but he's been the leadoff hitter, a guy that's performed well. I think he homered off of Wee and Len from the Athletics the other day. There's bat speed here. There's hitability. He's got speed as well. He won the KBO MVP as a 20-year-old. Turned 21 at the end of the season, but was 20 years old for all intents and purposes. Their speed, I think he had 38 home runs, 40 steals that season. Was a little injured last year, but I think we're seeing the type of player that he is now that he's fully healthy. The other guy I want to bring up is an outfielder from the KT Wiz. He was the KBO Rookie of the Year in 2025, and that's Hun Min Un. And apologies if I'm mispronouncing any of these names, but really talented player. There's more power coming. He's more physical than Kim, but is a guy that won a gold glove this year. He's one of, I think, two or three guys in KBO history to win a Rookie of the Year award and a gold glove in the same season. So it is very rare. And he's showing more power. Was a guy that was a little bit underrated, I think, even coming into the KBO because he had to do his military service. So he came out of the military service and is much stronger, bigger, faster. And I think is definitely an MLB prospect within a few years. And then we can get on to the Japanese pitchers. I don't know if you had any questions on the Korean guys, but
I'm gonna highlight Uncle Ted's here because you're gonna get into the pitchers. Sure. But he says Teruki Sato, and which you've Teruki Sato, you've kind of looked at him, and not that you don't like him, but we're not gonna dive too deep into him because he's a little bit more of kind of the Murray Kami type, right?
Yeah, it's similar swing and miss to Murakami with worse swing decisions. He chases a lot, which kind of gives me a little bit of a concern. There is big power there. He had a phenomenal season this year. I mean, he had career highs in homers with 40, doubles, hits, RBIs, OPS. He won the Central League MVP. So was one of the better players in MPB last year. But I do think the fact that like Okamoto and Murakami are playing over him makes a statement. I think the most interesting position prospect, at least in terms of what they could do in the future domestically for me and Team Japan, is Shota Morishita, who's an outfielder who hasn't played a ton because they have an MLB outfield there in Team Japan. But he's a younger guy, I think maybe the youngest position player on this team, and somebody that I think could come over in a few years and has a good case to be, an above average regular at peaks. So he's kind of the position guy that I would call out on Team Japan.
So what about the pitchers?
Yeah, I think that the pitching side of it is always very, very interesting. And there's a lot of different ways to kind of break this down. And I think I want to look at three guys that have the greatest potential to come over to MLB in the shortest window. One being the reigning Sawamura Award winner in Hiromi Ito. It's not the loudest stuff in the world, but it is, I think, six or seven different pitch shapes. He's a guy that can ride it. He's got a really good splitter. The slider has a decent amount of spin, and that's always one thing we know with Roki Sasaki that we're always a little concerned with when it comes to some of these MPB imports, is that a lot of these guys are super heavy pronation dominant and don't spin the baseball well. Ito does that well enough that, you know, I think he could make a transition to MLB. He's got a really deep pitch mix. It's probably more like a number four kind of a starter over here. But a pretty good one, and, you know, not a guy with a lot of power, but pitch ability and pitch shapes. The guy that's been getting the most buzz in terms of scouting feedback, and I think just people talking, he's a 27-year-old, and that's Atsuki Tanichi. It's a really, really good fastball, a steeper plane on his splitter, kind of a little bit of a flatter four seam. He rides it pretty well. But the splitter is just an absolutely dominant pitch for him. It's just generated whiffs at an alarm, an absurd rate in the WBC. He's more of a starter. I think that he's kind of put himself, you know, onto the radar potentially for a move over here in the next couple of years. And the last guy I wanted to call out was Tasai Ota, OTA. He's a closer for Team Japan. This is one of the flattest fastballs on earth. He's 5'11" and gets 7.8 feet of extension. I mean, it's Peyton Tolley type extension. He's like 6-7 inches shorter than Tolley is. He throws 95 to 96. It's a really, really low arm slot. It's a 3.4 VAA. When we see like Brody Hopkins has one of the flattest fastballs in all of affiliated baseball with like a 3.8 VAA, he's significantly lower than that. I think it's actually the most outlier release traits on earth. And you're talking about a guy that sits 95 to 96, will touch eights and nines with sink, and he's got a nasty splitter to go alongside it. So kind of a little bit of everything there in terms of, you know, high upside stuff guy in the middle, pitchability guy, and then a reliever. But there's just so many phenomenal, really interesting arms coming out of, you know, Japan right now, and just it's an absurd embarrassment of riches. It's funny because we look at the staff and we were like, oh, we don't know as many names as we knew in the last WBC. They might be every bit as good.
So Carlos, I want to ask you, because Joseph Contreras is in this for Brazil. He was in. You know, Brazil's basically been kind of knocked out, but Contreras is in this, and Contreras, this is one of the things I love about the WBC. We have Czech electricians who are striking out Shohei Ohtani. We have high school players who are facing Aaron Judge and Bobby Witt Jr. We see what Contreras did. And I don't want to make it, I think he had a 10 ERA. I don't want to make it sound like he just went out there and dominated, but he did show stuff. He did show poise. How much does that work into evaluation when we're talking about a player? He's living in the U.S. You know, this is Jose Contreras' son, but he's a draft prospect. Do scouts, do you think they're going to look at that and that's going to be part of the evaluation here? Here's what he did against Judge. Here's what he did against Gunnar Henderson. Or is that just kind of like a fun little tidbit?
I mean, I don't think it's going to change his evaluation significantly. It's very cool to see him perform at this stage, at his age, and be able to say that he got a swinging strike against Aaron Judge and got Aaron Judge, one of the best hitters we've seen in recent memory, out as a 17-year-old. He turns 18 in May. He has a very good chance to go inside the first round. I mean, purely the stuff he was showing at his age is obviously quite loud. I think teams have a pretty good understanding of who Contreras is at this point and what he does well. Jeff was talking about a number of splitters. What's maybe a separator for Contreras in this draft class is he has this insane fork ball and also a distinct changeup. And those are two pitches that the fork in particular that you don't see often. So I do think that like reading too much into this outing from an evaluation standpoint is maybe not what we want to do, but just the fact that you got to see him there at this stage, if nothing else, is very cool. I imagine Joseph being able to pitch against the players that he did is going to make the spring season in high school for him feel very easy by comparison. And again, I think this is a pitcher who we could easily be seeing in the first round. It's a very talented high school class, and he's right there in the mix with the best of them. So again, no, I don't think it's going to change the evals too much, but very cool to see nonetheless.
Pitching coach goes out, you know, between mound meeting during the middle of an inning. Don't give this guy too much respect. After all, you have faced Aaron Judge this year.
Right.
You know, this guy's not Aaron Judge. which is going to be very true. But Jeff, when I'm looking at winners and losers of WBC, we could look at Puerto Rico, which has a great start to the tournament so far. You know, the Dominican Republic looks just, their lineup looks just as fierce. But I think we could also make the case that one of the winners here is the Los Angeles Angels. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, they've had some prospects that have really performed in this tournament. Niger Victor with Great Britain obviously showed, you know, phenomenal stuff. I think you had pulled out a stat, you know, that he had obviously struck out Judge, Harper, Henderson, Roman Anthony the following inning. And you kind of pulled out how many times he'd even struck out four batters in a
three minor. Times, I believe.
Yeah, exactly. So it was a rare occurrence just in his professional performance. Sam Aldegieri had a phenomenal start this weekend. I think he might have even set a record for whiffs in a WBC start, but I have to double check on that one. And then Lucas Ramirez had home runs off of Logan Webb and Gabe Spire, which was a left on left home runs, which is kind of impressive. And he had homered actually earlier in the week off of Jacob DeGrom. So, you know, Manny Ramirez's son, certainly somebody that we were aware of. I certainly wasn't entering the week thinking Aldegieri, we kind of knew was a decent prospect, maybe, you know, perform better than we would have expected. But, you know, as far as Ramirez and Victor, I did not expect to see those kind of performances or them to be the prospects that we were talking about. So I don't know what your take is on it, JJ, but kind of a funny little wrinkle and unusual. Unexpected.
I like how Carlos put it before. It's something that's useful, but at the same time, you don't want to go overboard because it's a very short period of time here. But I do want to say, though, I think that this all just fits in. There's a piece over at baseballamerica.com right now where I wrote about, I know we've talked about the Olympics. Bryce Harper talked about the Olympics, you know, this week. But, and look, we'd all love to see major league players in the Olympics. But I just kind of want to make the point. I made the point over at our site that the Olympics is going to be a six-team tournament that's played over 6 days. It's going to leave out countries who very much should be in any kind of international, who's the best team in the world kind of competition. That's not the case with WBC. We have 20 teams here. We had another six teams that tried to qualify for the World Baseball Classic. This is the best baseball tournament in the world. I don't think that's going to change. And kind of along those lines, Jeff, we've seen a lot. We're not done with pool play yet, but we're getting there. We know a lot of the teams that are moving on already. Who's your pick now? Now that you've seen a little bit more, who's your pick to win it?
I'm going to go with the defending champs, Team Japan. I just think it means more. I just think it means the world to them to win this tournament. And frankly, like, you know, for my own like selfish purposes, I want to see two games with Team Japan. So I'm going to go with Team Japan, but I think it's US Japan again.
I will say, I'm going to say that I want to see this DR, the Dominican Republic Venezuela game is going to be incredible. And it does have something. They're both going to advance, but it does have something going because you do definitely want to face the number two team in pool play, not number one there. So that is our look at the World Baseball Classic. And we want to kind of dive in. Carlos is here to talk about, we have a new mock draft up at Baseball America, and we will dive into that in just a moment. From the World Baseball Classic through the World Series to the World Cup to NASCAR and IndyCar, with Fox One, you get it all live. Start your 7-day free trial today. Offers are subject to change. Download Fox One today and stream the World Baseball Classic live now through March 17th. Go to foxone.com for complete terms and conditions. Fox One, streaming now. Over at baseballamerica.com, we have mock draft version 1.0. Yes, we've done mocks before, but this is a full 40, and this is now that things are actually happening. We have games in the, you know, kind of on the resume now in spring. We have a lot of kind of more scouting feedback. Carlos, you did this one where you and a scout who actually works for a team anonymously went back and forth picking, which I love when you do that because it gets a little bit of a different feel to it. And also you kind of get that little bit of, okay, when is this guy going to take this player or not? What kind of were some of the takeaways? What were kind of some of the names that surprised you either by going off the board a little earlier than you maybe expected or maybe sliding a little bit more than you expected?
Yeah, I love doing this one with the scout for the reasons you mentioned. I think it's a little early in the year to feel confident about any specific player team connections, because I think for the most part, the industry is still scouting them up. Everyone has pretty wide nets on who they're evaluating. Now, players are bucketed in certain ranges, and obviously teams picking 10 plus are not going to be spending a lot of time on Rochulowski. Maybe even 5 plus are not going to be spending a lot of time with Rochulowski. But I do like to, in this iteration, sometimes just avoid players that I'm unsure of how far they might be slipping to see how far they will go before my scout takes that player off the board. One of the players I was really interested to see was Liam Peterson, how far he was going to slide. He didn't go within the first 16 picks of this draft. He ended up going at 17. I took him there in that range. And I do think that Liam Peterson is this really interesting pitching prospect because his stuff is tremendously loud, but the control has just been a little erratic this year. Once we got to 17 and I was looking at some of the other players off the board, I couldn't really stomach him lasting too much longer. But I do start to wonder, like, if he's not able to throw a bit more strikes moving forward, is he going to slip a bit further? Another name that stood out to me was Gio Rojas, left-handed pitcher out of Stoneman Douglas High in Florida. He went 16 to the Rangers. This was our scout pick. Going into this, I would have very confidently told you that Carson Bolamon, the high school pitcher out of South Carolina, would be the first high school pitcher off the board. I get a lot of confidence that he is the top high school pitcher in the class at this point. And kind of in my mind, he's always the first name that's coming off the board. But that was not the case in this mock. I do think throughout this draft cycle, placing the high school pitchers is going to be very tricky because there are a number of teams that are just not going to want to touch a high school arm inside the first round with their first pick. But they're also going to have to deal with the fact that this high school pitching class is incredibly talented. This class is deep overall, so there are a lot of options. So that's just a demographic that I think is going to be even more fascinating this year than it is typically. And then beyond that, two names that I think have a chance to go quite a bit higher than they actually went in this mock draft are both the top college catchers in the class, Ryder Helfrich at Arkansas and then Vaughn Lackey at Georgia Tech. We just spent some time earlier this morning kind of going over some potential updates we're going to have on our draft board as a staff internally. I think Vaughn Lackey and Ryder Helfrich have really solid chances to go as high as like the top 10 picks. I don't think that would be shocking to anyone. Both are players who are coming out of the gates incredibly hot. Lackey is this tremendous athlete who moves exceptionally well. Ryder Helfrich has insane power for a player who's projected to stick at the position. So those are two players that I could maybe see moving up in future mock drafts as kind of the college hitters continue to move up the board. I feel like this is a typical sort of movement that we see throughout the class. The college hitters move up, the high school pitchers slide, and there are so many college hitters in this class that probably warrant top 30 consideration. At a certain point, we're just not going to have room for them all, but those are two that I could see going a little bit higher in our next one.
We have a couple of questions here. We always love to get your questions, try to answer them as much as we can. And I'm going to answer the baseball toss question here. Should we be worried about Rochulowski's last week and a half? The answer is no. He's hit a couple of homers. He's drawn a lot of walks, but
I was about to say, did he have a bad week?
Yeah, the feedback is still excellent. He's still the clear number one prospect in the class. No, we should not be worried. Yes, I promise you he's not going to hit 5 homers every week, but at the same time, there's nothing there that's been really troubling.
I'll also just add, he currently is running a 1300 OPS, which is the best of his career. So the idea that like a week and a half of him not going scorched earth, Will Gasparino mode, I guess, Rochulowski is going to be fine. He is entrenched in the 1-1. I do think some of the feedback we've gotten early this year through the first 4 weeks, like Rock has passed the test. He's been the player teams expected. No one has really pushed him out of that 1-1 spot right now. It's a guy with maybe 4+ tools who's playing shortstop, who's always dominated his competition, is continuing to do so. So no, career year Rochulowski, no need to worry about him so far.
But this one I think is kind of ties in a little bit what you were talking about with Liam Peterson. So this college pitching class could be ranked way different by end of May. I think we would all agree with that. I think Cam Flukie is another guy that we could bring up, Carlos, who could very much is kind of a wild card right now.
He is a wild card. He's mostly just kind of in the wait and see bucket. Cameron Flukie, he made his first start of the year. Then he had a rib injury that's kept him out. We'll see when he comes back. We've heard that the max is maybe like an 8-week timeline. But basically, if Cameron Flukie comes back and he's the same pitcher that he was week one, that he was a year ago, I feel pretty confident that Cameron Flukie still has a chance to go inside the top 10. Now, I think Jackson Flora has maybe taken over the SP1 conversation at this stage, just given some of the adjustments we've seen to his arsenal and just the pure stuff is so electric that a lot of people like him there. But Cameron Flueke is just this polished pitcher who also has really strong stuff and one of the better track records of throwing strikes and performing at a high level. So if he comes back and looks the same, I think we're going to see him inside the top 10 on a number of our mocks. I do think that there is like this maybe uncertain middle ground territory kind of in the middle of the first round where there are a number of college arms who entered the year outside of the first round range who are kind of pushing up into that territory. And then Liam Peterson, who I mentioned, who is this very unusual pitching profile, or I guess hard to place confidently profile. But the point is good. The college pitching class will be ranked much differently. We see this happen every year. Pitchers go out, they look different, they perform, they move up the boards. I think the hitting is just more exciting in the top 20-ish range. I think there are only a couple of college arms I would be interested in here, but there's a lot of talent overall in the college pitching class. Guys like Tegan Coons have looked good. Guys like Gabe Gackel have looked good. Mason Edwards, making his case as the best left-handed pitcher in the class, he's looked good as well. So those are all names you continue to see maybe more inside the top 30 as we progress.
Jeff, I'll give one to you also. Another one from Ben Fullenkamp, who asked, there more helium for Joey Volchko or Cade Townsend when you look at this? What would you say?
I mean, I think as far as helium, it's probably Townsend at this moment because he was coming, I think, from a place of not being as necessarily highly ranked early on in the process. So he's climbing up. It's been more positive feedback. You know, we've heard some positive things on Volchko. I mean, there are more strikes. I do think the mechanics and that sort of thing look better. But the concerns around him not missing as many bats against really subpar competition that Georgia's faced to start the season, I think, is a bit of a concern. And I think you look at a guy like Townsend, who, you know, is a younger in terms of the class, in terms of draft eligible, college starters. He's really athletic. There's power there in terms of the arsenal. He rides it pretty well. There's three secondary pitches that are all performing pretty well with good miss rates. So, yeah, I think you look at Townsend, he's a guy that could continue to move up, especially when you look at how deep his arsenal is, how well he moves, and the power that's in that arsenal. I do think that Volchko, though, is just super interesting because there aren't a lot of guys that, you know, pretty much spin all their pitches between 2,800 and 3,000 RPM. So maybe just a matter of someone cracking the code there. It just depends where he ends up.
Well, we don't have to worry about Volchko's competition anymore. SEC and conference play around the nation starts this weekend. I know there was some conference play last weekend, but most conferences start this weekend. And we've got WBC. And we want to ask you the question, is there one game in America this week or weekend that you can't miss? SeatGeek has got you covered. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. The MLB regular season is just around the corner. The World Baseball Classic is heating up. The NBA season is in full swing. And right now, you can get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek as well. SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know if you're getting a good deal. So look for the green dots. Green means good. Red means bad. Plus, every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, we have a code for you guys. You can use the code TERRITORY10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code TERRITORY10. Make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. That is SeatGeek. Check out your best game, the game that you need to see with the green dot on SeatGeek. So wrapping it up here with the final sprint, we can't not talk about spring training because spring training is rolling along. I did want us to talk about, we could talk about Connor Griffin and Kevin McGonigal, J.J. Weatherholt, these shortstops at the top of the draft, Jesus Mata, who's gained weight, looks bigger and stronger and all that. But Jeff, let's talk about, speaking of gaining weight, Zach Veen, one time, first round pick, I believe that he said he gained 43 pounds over the offseason, cut out, drinking, and is in, quote, the best. You know, I would say that is very much the wow amount of weight gain. But he also is having a great spring. A couple of walk-offs already. He's hitting monster home runs. Is it time to kind of circle back a little bit on Zach Veen?
Yeah, I mean, there's always been some interesting underlying skills to come back to. The angles have always been pretty good. That's never been an issue. The swing decisions have always been pretty good. That's never been an issue. I think there's been enough run and like defense there. if he's able to actually make sustainable changes where he can hit for power, he can backspin the ball on his best contact, he's going to do a lot of damage, and it might be enough to sort of get him, you know, into an everyday situation in Colorado, and obviously a great park to hit in. So, yeah, when it comes to the Rockies and that current organization, anybody showing anything positive, I think that it's very reasonable to kind of circle back and see where it goes. I'm not pushing it on to a top 100 list, but, you know, certainly a guy that I think is worth watching over the first couple months of the season to see where this goes, especially if he ends up breaking camp with the team.
So a couple other players I do want to highlight. The A's have a couple of guys that, you know, yes, Leo DeVries did have a 2-home run, you know, he had kind of a breakout, but I want to kind of look at Henry Bolte, Tommy White, both are having really strong springs. These are not guys necessarily where you're saying, okay, they're going to break camp with the big league club, but you love seeing guys have springs like this. And here we are, we're seeing them both really hit the ball hard, kind of show a, you know, some hittability as well. The kind of things that you want to see, again, when you're talking about spring training, you're looking for those little glimmers. You're looking for those flashes. I would say Tanner McDougal at the White Sox, another guy, because yes, he throws hard. He's triple digits, but he also is throwing strikes. And that's what we want to see. Thank you for watching another of the Baseball America Hot Sheet shows. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Carlos. Remember to like and share this video and subscribe to the Baseball America YouTube channel. Check out all of our coverage at the BA YouTube channel and also, of course, at baseballamerica.com. For Jeff, for Carlos. So long, everybody.